Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Happy New Year to one and all, and especially my co-host, John Dixon, who is of course with me this evening.
Good evening.
As I am back.
Yeah.
See from my little illness.
Yeah.
Finally caught up with me.
I was able to hang on for the thing.
Yes, well done.
Indeed. I hope you had a good Christmas, New Year and everything. I haven't seen you for a few days now.
I eventually came down with a certain virus that was going around for the past 3 years daily. I thought I was bulletproof with my four jabs and avoiding a few close calls, but it got me in the end. God damn it. Anyway, enough of that. Happy New Year to you, John, and all our listeners. And as ever, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text number and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. Your standard text rate supply on that one. It's 087-179-1032. And we're also available on the World Wide Web, live and as a podcast at dublincityfm.ie. We're going to start as usual with where to start in the night sky. We'll discuss the grand stretch in the evenings in a moment. But first, it's with regard to the planets, John, it's goodbye Saturn and hello Venus.
Yep, it sure is. And I'm delighted to announce that Venus is appearing very low in the southwest in twilight just at the moment. Try for them with binoculars just as it gets to twilight into darkness. And that's roughly 20 to 30 minutes after sunset. Venus, of course, is by far the brightest at magnitude -3.9, which is really good in the brightness world, and it gets a trace higher as the weeks go on, but unfortunately Mercury is dropping and fading fast, and it's only a dim +0.9, so just look for a little bit to the right of Venus, about 3 degrees, which is only about a thumb's width at arm's length. It's going to be impossible after that a few days later, so you may forget about Mercury for the moment. Mars continues to fade slowly from magnitude -1.2 to 1. And Jupiter, these are two fantastic things to watch out for at the moment because they're very high. And in fact, I had, during Christmas week, of course, I had my telescope out.
Oh.
And I was browsing my way through the skies. Now, unfortunately, I like looking at Orion. It's quite low, and so I have to wait till a little bit later for it to rise quite high because of the light pollution that we have in the Dublin Meath area. But I did get to see it. But certainly the moons of Jupiter were in a peculiar position. There was only three of them available to see in around the 26th into the 27th of December. That was just clearing a few cobwebs out of the mind. And I stayed out for probably a couple of hours, actually, just browsing through the sky to see what we could see. And anything from the double star, you know, the Mizar one in the plough, I got to see Andromeda because it was extremely high, so I had to resort to binoculars for that one because the telescope was virtually pointing straight up, which is no mean feat when you're down on your knees trying to look through a right-angled thingy-bob lens.
Have you got a Schmidt-Cassegrain?
Yeah. Yeah, so it's it was quite awkward, but a good sight in two binoculars as well, because I know exactly where it is now at this stage, so we're lucky. Jupiter shines, of course, high in the south in twilight, so it's up first, and it's up quite high. If you look, if the seeing is good tonight, I'm not sure if it is or not, sort of a bit blotchy, although my Sky app told me it's going to be pretty good tonight for Sky Watch, so maybe it'll clear up later on. So Jupiter's -2.4, not quite as bright as Venus. We're looking really forward to see that when it gets up a little bit higher. Saturn is getting very, very low in the southwest at nightfall, so it's going to disappear. And it's slipping away and won't be back for a while. Uranus, Neptune, 5.7, 7.9, and they move high across the south during the evening. The need a good pair of binoculars or a telescope to see both of those. And if you're in the humour, you can certainly do that if you want to, if you sort of know where it is. Indeed, if you have one of those go-to telescopes, just press the button and it catches up with it, which is really, really good. So there we go. If you're a red spot watcher on the planet of, I've nearly said Saturn there, but Jupiter, tomorrow, 8:27 p.m, so a good time to watch for it, and the 5th at 4:19 p.m, just as it's getting dark. So you'll get to see the great red spot pointing our direction for an hour or two, which will be good as well. So that's what's happening around in the planets. Now, I just wanted to nip back to Venus at Christmas time. And we always associate this, I think, with being the star of Bethlehem. And what happened, and the astronomers have been looking for over the years, is the possible conjunction of Venus and Jupiter at the same time, at the time that Jesus was born. And that's why it made it so bright. It was the exact time, seemingly. And it made it very, very bright. And that's what they call the Star of Bethlehem. Nowadays, we just see Venus, because it's not going to happen for a long, 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 long time to come. And funnily enough, another astronomical date was also seen in relation to when King Herod died and what happened in the night sky around that time, narrowing results to a possible conjunction again between two planets. I'm not sure which ones they were, but they were believed to have been just two of them side by side.
And we got the years for that.
They say
minus 3 BC.
Yeah, but something around minus 3 BC. Yes, they were, and they led.
Because I think Herod, despite the stories, wasn't Herod dead before the year 1?
So it's that was one of the reasons where they got the thing with the Star of Bethlehem. So you can blame Venus and Jupiter for that, by the sounds of things.
Probably. Or maybe even a third.
Yeah, it's possible. And a conjunction. It's certainly not.
I've read various stories about what the Star of Bethlehem was. Some people thought it was a comet, but comets were kind of known, and they. But apparently, these three wise men from the east would have been astronomers or astrologers, as they were in the day, and would have known about this conjunction and what part of the sky it was in, and would have ascertained certain meanings from that. I did read a report, I can't remember who it was, but from shepherds watching their flocks at night, on what time of the year they would do that. And basically, this guy, and I can't remember his name, he put all this evidence together, and he came up, I can't remember the exact date, but he decided from the evidence that there was, with conjunctions and other passages in the Bible like that, and shepherds watching their flocks at night and things like that, that Jesus was born in something like that. 3rd of September.
September or something. I've heard
BC
that one too.
Or something like
exactly
that.
Exactly. So,
but we know.
Yeah, well, it's good.
If he was.
We have to trust
him. Evermore.
That's the benchmark for nowadays, anyway. So, going back yet.
Maybe we'll do another. A bit of research on this.
Everywhere I
find out. But, yeah. I mean, nobody claims that he was born on the 25th of December.
No.
And,
I think, yeah.
But.
It doesn't really matter. Yeah, tail end of the year. Imagine having Christmas in September.
If you're in the Southern Hemisphere, it's obviously 25th of December, but I was in New Zealand at 25th of December, and there was a Santies walking down the street in a parade in the middle of summer with their big red suits on, absolutely sweating.
Funny enough, I was talking
about perspiring like nobody's business there.
Yeah. Talking to my sister in Australia, in Adelaide, last week, and she said it was 41 degrees.
Oh, my goodness.
And suddenly the wind changed and it was 23 degrees. So they have a southerly blast or a desert blast from the north to heat or cool down. But 41 degrees, that's a bit hot for Christmas. That'll be
Turkey cooks itself. Speaking of the moon, John, we had, I was just looking at it on the way in. I could just about make it where it was between the clouds, actually. But it is up at the moment. It's a waxing gibbous moon. We're heading towards the full moon, which will be on Friday the 6th. At 7 minutes past 11 in the evening, to be precise, but at the moment it's a 91% waxing gibbous moon, and it will be due south of us here in Dublin just after 10 o'clock this evening, when it'll be 92%, and when it sets tomorrow morning just before 7 a.m., it'll be up to 94%, and then when it rises again tomorrow in the afternoon at 2 p.m., it'll be up to 95%. So when it gets to full moon, it's very, very slowly. The rate of change of how much you can see is much lower than when it's around first quarter or thereabouts. Yes, first quarter. So sunrise tomorrow in Dublin will be at 8:39 a.m., which is a whole 1 minute earlier than a week ago. Local noon is at 12:29 p.m., which is 3 minutes later than a week ago. And the sun will set, would you believe it, 4:20 p.m., 8 minutes later than a week ago, and a whole about 12 minutes later than it was setting around about the 13th of December. Not quite what you'd call a grand stretch in the evenings, but it is getting there. And from that time, 4:20, when the sun sets, until just after 5 p.m., we have civil twilight. And from then until a quarter to six or so, we have nautical twilight. And from then until 6:30, we have astronomical twilight. And after 6:30, then we have astronomical night. So tomorrow we have 1 minute and 30 seconds more daylight than today, when there'll be 7 hours and 41 minutes between sunrise and sunset. And that's a whole 9 minutes more than a week ago.
It's remarkable, isn't it? It suddenly lulls between around the 21st for a week before, a week after, and then suddenly takes off again. So
yeah, the rate of change increases until the equinoxes, when it'll change at about 4 minutes
four
a day.
And a half,
or four and a half minutes a day.
Yeah, 4 minutes 29 or thereabouts. Yeah. Yep, that's what happens. So it's, as it creeps up to Christmas time, it goes down to almost 0 second, maybe 1 second of daylight in retard or the other way.
Oh, by the way, tomorrow, isn't it tomorrow that we're at perihelion? The sun, the earth rather, is at perihelion tomorrow, Wednesday. To be precise, it's just after 4 p.m. tomorrow, it'll be at perihelion. Now, what does that mean? That means that the sun and the earth will be nearest the sun in its orbit. The earth, as we know, the earth orbits around the sun, but it's not in a perfect circle. It is slightly elliptical, and tomorrow is when the sun will be at its closest to the earth. Now, it's not too far off circular, but we usually measure we talk about, as we have done many times, about the mean distance between the earth and the sun. Mm. We call that one astronomical unit. Well, tomorrow it'll be 0.9833 astronomical units, which is about 91 million miles, or if you want to be precise, it's over 147 million kilometres. It's only about 3% closer than we would usually be. And, of course, when we're nearer the sun, we go a bit faster, as all planets do when they're that little bit nearer the sun. If you remember your Kepler's laws, arcs in similar time. I've forgotten exactly what it is, but anyway, equal area in equal time, but we'll get to that some other time. So the earth revolves at about 0.6 miles per second faster at perihelion than at aphelion, when the sun is farthest from the earth. Actually, I was talking to a friend of mine last night about this, and I was trying he asked me to explain the equation of time, because I was telling him that, you know, the clock on the wall was 24 hours. Every day is 24 hours, but every day is not 24 hours long. And anyway, I wouldn't make a good teacher, I don't think. I try to explain the equation of time.
You've taken
and why the days,
space class every now and again.
The days are of different lengths. So we're 3% nearer, but that actually means that we receive about 7% more solar energy than when we're at aphelion, when we're furthest away, which of course is around early July.
And why is it not hotter?
It's because the angle of incidence of the sun. Well, if you were in the southern hemisphere, you'd say, oh, well, to them it makes sense, we're nearer, and there it's hotter down there, of course.
Yeah.
That's the Earth's tilt. We'll get into that again some other time, too.
It's very strange that we had our hottest year this year, and certainly over the UK, 41 degrees, and it's a big panic over down under Australia. it's life as normal. They know how to handle it. It's really, really strange. So there we go. Now, just go back to last week. We did mention over the last couple of weeks that the Mars InSight lander was failing because of dust on the solar panels. And unfortunately, on December the 20th, the InSight Mars mission is unfortunately history, and the NASA's, boss declared that the mission is actually over. So on the 21st, they made two attempts from Mission Control Center at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Southern California to reach the lander via relay satellites in Mars's orbit, but have up to this been unsuccessful. So now they've officially retired the InSight lander after 4 years on Mars, which is a real shame. And I wonder if at some stage it gets a whirl of a dust devil, would it suddenly decide to burst back into operation again. And no doubt there'll be somebody keeping an eye on it as well. So InSight was one of the four missions currently on the Red Planet, along with the US rovers Perseverance and Curiosity, and China's Zhurong as well. The other one as well, Spirit and Opportunity, when we started the radio program here back in 2004, were on their way to Mars, and Spirit in 2014 slipped down the side of a sand dune away from the sunshine, so the solar panels let it rest in peace. And then dust got the better of Opportunity in 2018, and it was defunct then as well, which is was unfortunate as well. But the good, the bright side of that was that they were only supposed to last 90 days, and they lasted for years, which is great, and got some great stuff and information out of both of those, including, well, we've Perseverance. What have we got left? Curiosity. It's doing its thing, but no doubt and when time comes along, it'll be a dust particles that will rest. It's remarkable how they haven't invented these little atmosphere puffy devices that blow the dust off the panels, which is
you could have a little fan. That's yeah. True. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's more electronic, more weight, and
well, I don't know. Would it be much
more energy fuel to get it there? But that's a good point. But the other, I think, the main thing is, if I'm not mistaken, that you can only recharge batteries so many times. Anyway,
that's true. Unless these fancy new lithium batteries. You can put it into vibrate mode as well. It might clear them as well. Just backwards and forwards a few times quite quickly just to shovel the stuff backwards and forwards. But no doubt they have their reasons as to why it lasts, the dust lasts for so long on the panels as well. So unfortunately, that's the InSight lander gone out of our way. So we have Spirit, Opportunity, and the InSight lander gone silent in the last little whiles.
Thank you, John, for that. You're listening to The Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and Ben Emmett. And our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. And the text number is 087-179-1032, as is the WhatsApp number. You can also get us there as well. And thanks to Alan for his text. Mm-hmm. Welcoming
us back.
Yeah. It's great to be back.
It's been a whole year.
Yeah. We've another year ahead, mm-hmm. unless we're thrown out. But speaking of the year that's gone, and just a short mention, if I may, of the Chinese space program. China had a very active space program last year. They made a substantial progress, and they made a lot of new records. Do you believe, John, they completed more than 60 launches last year, and 53 of those were on the famous Long March carrier rockets. And the successful missions included the deployment of a record-breaking 22 satellites into space by one of the Long March 8 rockets. They had the debut flight of a Long March 6 rocket with a solid strap-on boosters, and the launch of reusable test spacecraft by a Long March 2F rocket. But of course, the most profile rocket launches were related to the construction of the Chinese space station, with two manned spaceships, two cargo craft, and two 20-ton lab modules sent into orbit. And one of them weighs 23 tons, making it the world's heaviest single-cabin active spacecraft in orbit. They had a total of 9 Taikonauts on 3 missions, the Shenzhou's 13, 14s, and 15s. And they, of course, were involved in the construction of the space station, and they also carried out their first in-orbit crew rotation. So at one stage, there had six Chinese citizens, astronauts or taikonauts, on the space station at that time. And one of them, Chen Dong, he became the first taikonaut to remain in orbit for more than 200 days before he came back to Earth on December 4th. And there was also a lot of other launches. This year also witnessed the debut of several commercial Chinese rockets as they deployed satellites into space. And, of course, they have very, very ambitious plans in the coming years to go to the moon, a manned landing on the moon. But they have a unmanned rover on the far side of the moon at the moment, if I'm not mistaken. But their longer-term plans, of course, are to manned missions to the moon and eventually to Mars. Who will be the first to Mars? China?
Yeah, could be.
NASA, ESA, who's brave, Japanese, who's JAXA conglomeration? Yeah. Who knows?
Who's brave enough? That's the big, big question. Now, there was a bit of a fuss over a Soyuz backup leak on the International Space Station over the last week or so. Now, they had to postpone a walk out in space because of the debris that was knocking around at the time, so they had to do that first. So NASA actually delayed the planned spacewalk to venture outside the ISS at the last moment, last Wednesday, after a large piece of Russian space debris came dangerously close to the orbital outpost. So going on from that, the space station seemingly was hit by what they say now is a tiny meteorite, which hit one of the coolant units, and there was a bit of a leak there. So they're pondering at the moment, that's NASA pondering, sort of the chance to get up and rescue three astronauts about 2 weeks before they're due to come home so that they can just continue on as normal. So they're asking SpaceX if they would be able to go up and rescue them as backup after the Soyuz leak. And SpaceX spacecraft may be able to rescue three space station crew members, and suggesting that they might come down, but it's no immediate danger seemingly so far. But anything with a leak is not good on a space station, which is not really the thing that they want to do. So they no doubt will get that fixed as soon as they can, or indeed fly something up there just to take it apart, put it back together again. So every now and again, they've got to watch out for space junk, and big chunks of space junk traveling at 17,500 miles an hour plus is something that you do not want to be in the way of.
Thank you, John. Let's go from China then and the space station to South Korea. They also have plans. Their first ever lunar orbiter, which they called Danuri, has sent back its first black and white photographs of the moon's surface and of Earth. And actually that word Danuri is a portmanteau of the Korean words for moon and enjoy. And it was launched on a SpaceX rocket from the United States back in August of last year, 2022. And it entered lunar orbit last month. And the images that they've sent back were taken between December 24th and January 1st. It shows the lunar surface and Earth. And some of them were taken from less than 120 kilometers or 75 miles above the lunar surface. And it is, that spacecraft is orbiting the moon every 2 hours or so. And it begins its scientific mission proper next month. And, of course, South Korea has its own more ambitious plans for outer space, including landing a spacecraft on the moon by 2032 and on Mars by 2045.
Wow, it's getting closer and closer, but so far away in our language.
We're always
fingers crossed and hoping. Just, I did want to get into the most distant spacecraft in the solar system. We're going to have to get back to that next week because it's a lengthy little version of a thing. But for those of you who like an odd comet, there's a possible naked eye comet which will visit Earth for the first time since Neanderthals. This is way, way back in time, in 2023. So the end of January is when we might be able to do that. So it just depends on what the plume will be like once it gets closer to the sun. So this is a comet known as C2022E3 ZTF, whatever that means. And it's currently passing through the inner solar system perihelion, and it'll be passing through on January the 12th, and it's going to whip past Earth, making its closest passage on about February the 2nd, to be exact. So you'll get a chance for a week or so before and a week after to possibly see a naked eye. If not, you will get to see it with a good pair of binoculars or indeed a good telescope as well. So looking forward to seeing that one too.
Super. Let's hope we can see that it becomes a naked eye object. Comets are notoriously difficult to predict how bright they're going to become or not. Unfortunately, we have to go now. We're out of time. But I do want to mention that next week we have a very special guest, Ronan Newman, who has been on this show before, a good few years ago now, but he's going to talk to us about Irish Astronomy Week, which is coming up at the end of March, and there's lots of activities involved. There's going to be lots of events around the countries. A lot of libraries are getting involved, a lot of practically every astronomical society and organisation in the country, and there'll be lots of talks in libraries and the dark sky areas. They're getting involved in geoparks, and there's absolutely loads to, and there'll be something for everyone no matter where you are in the country. It's going to be a great week. It should be absolutely fantastic. Ronan will be on the phone to him next week. He'll give us all the details. And there's lots to go through. It might take us weeks to get through. So there seems to be a big program at the moment. So we look forward to that and talking to Ronan Newman next week about Irish Astronomy Week. There will be an event near you, wherever you are in the country. But that's all the time we have this evening. Thank you for that, John. That's all from me, Ben Abbott, for this edition of the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Lumen City FM. Up next is Hello China, 9 o'clock. It's Threads with Brent Lyon at 11 o'clock here to the Globe with Nigel Wood. And at midnight, we have After Hours with Dave Barry's mix of jazz, blues and soul. But please join myself and John at the same time next week with our special guest, Ronan Newman. And then we will be back with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening. And say goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
Goodnight, John.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.